the legends, Jimmy Vaccaro. Everybody knows Jimmy Vaccaro. Nick Bogdanovich, Chris Andrews. Yeah. Chris Andrews, who runs South Point. Jimmy Vaccaro, who runs South Point. Vinny Maiulo, who, if I don't know if you know who Vinny is, but he's one of the hosts of VEASAN.
I think I recognized everyone in that picture except maybe one.
Barry Phillips was there. He's one of our crew. We went down there and Richie. You may not know Richie, but he actually created a platform that Wim Hill uses their sports applications on for all that stuff. So Richie, he was one of the creators of that. So did I miss anybody? I mean, I think that
covers it, because I think there were six in the photo. I think you said all their names.
And Jeff and another guy, the guy that actually took the picture. His name is Jeff. He's one of the sharpest handicappers I know. He gave me 3 out of 4 winners for the weekend, which, heck, I'll take that every week. I mean, I'll take three. I'd be happy to go 3-2 each weekend to make money. You know, the key number, if you're betting things straight up, I think it's, what is it, 52.6? Is that what it is, Josh?
Give or take. You're exactly right. They're right around 53%. And people don't realize, you're right. You say, oh, 3-2, that shouldn't be too hard. Think about it for the whole season. That's 60%, right? That being, if you could somehow do that, like you said, can every week of the NFL, if you kept that 60% clip, you're in the 90th percentile of people who can do it. Because you're right. Over time, though, over 1,000 picks, or let's just say that if you were able to break that threshold at 53%, that's where you are a profitable better.
Well, and Josh hit a key point on the head right there. He saying that if you pick 53%, you're picking 60% winners. Well, the VIG is weighed into that. When you're making straight bets, you're laying -110 on both sides. So you have to actually overcome that -10%, basically. So if you have to pick 60%, like you said, Josh, you know, that's good. That's six out of 10 winners is damn good. So listeners, if you have somebody trying to sell you picks saying that they're picking 70%, run for the hills. Exactly. Get away from them.
Documented proof. It has to be a thing, Ken, where like they post it in a public forum well held ahead of time and everything's graded, you know, properly. And if you actually see evidence that someone consistently does this, that's one thing. But you're right. The stuff you're going to see on Facebook or even Twitter everywhere else, like, come with us, 75% since 2002, not a chance.
Documented proof over time, Josh, because I've had two months, where I've picked 85%, 90%. But on the heels of that, you know, you have the ebbs and the flows. You know, now I have the valley, you know. So believe me, you need documented over an extended period of time.
Exactly.
These guys that say, we're picking 80%, we're 15-3. They very well could be. But you know what's getting ready to happen? Law of great numbers, law of averages are getting ready to catch up.
Exactly.
So we went down there and, you know, we played poker one night over at Richie's house, had a great time, just sitting at the table, listening to the brains of the all the bookmakers. You know, Jimmy Vaccaro's been doing this forever. You know, Chris Andrews, a legend. Nick Bogdanovich, a legend. Barry Phillips, if you know Barry Phillips, a local guy, you know, he's living in Vegas right now. He runs all the Terribles casinos, legend. You know, and Vinny Maiulo, I always have trouble with his last name, you know, the host on VEASAN, you know, he's the one guy. But what we did, I don't know if I should say this. I can tell you that I entered 5 contests. So I can't get into the specifics. I can tell you that I do have an entry in the $1,000 it's the last man standing. Basically what you do is the entry fee is $1,000 and you get one pick each week versus no spread, just who's going to win, but you can only use that team one time throughout the whole year. So you can't just take, I don't know, whoever, the Chiefs every week. You know, you can use the Chiefs one time. And I won my pick in that. I do have an entry.
Good thing you didn't take the Colts, right?
No.
Every survivor type pool, like, it was down like 75% because week one, the unanimous pick was the Colts.
Yeah.
So many people were already wiped out of survivor.
$1,000 entry fee, not just the Eagles. So, but real quick, I'll get back to where I stand right now with that. But I also have two entries into the $1,000 super contest and the Circa Million. So I'm all across the board. I'm invested in all of these contests. But going back to what you said, Josh, I think 1,374 people entered the last man standing contest, basically. After week one, 45% are out.
Yep. It's just, the way it goes, especially like you mentioned, with those two straight up, with the Eagles and Colts going down to touchdown underdogs. I mean, that's by and large, It's kind of funny. Like, you really do have to pick your spots because it's one of those things that's so tempting. We'll just take the biggest favorite that's playing it safe.
Doesn't work that week.
Right. You really have to look more so at the matchup and who's likely. And I tell you what, if you're more confident about a 3-point favorite than a 10-point one, by all means, because those things, like you said, you can't do over and there's no second chance. So.
So we're I'm in there. We're invested in that, and I have multiple entries, multiple entries into the best contest, in my opinion, absolutely hands down, the William Hill contest, the pro pick'em contest. You know, I have entries across that. Not very good in that last week, though. I mean, you're talking about the William Hill pro pick'em contest, $300,000 guarantee, $25 entry, or you can enter four times and get a fifth one free. And basically, it seems like a really, really simple contest, listeners. You pick all 15 games with no point spread. That's it. You just pick 15 games with no point spread. The person that has the most weekly winners, they chop up a portion of the prize. And then at the end of the year, the person that has the most overall winners for the entire 17 weeks, they chop up first prize. So with no winners, 8-7, 6-9. I mean, that's how rough week one was in the NFL. That's how rough it was.
Yeah, like you said, that's one of those things we talked about ahead of time with the contest that, you know, it's simple in terms of, you know, how to play it, but don't get deceived into thinking, you know, simple rules means easy to succeed, because you mentioned, you know, without the spread that come up and bite you, you can take all the chalks and, you know, more or less, if you take every huge chalk, yeah, you'll come out with a winning record most of the time. This was one of those funky weekends. And Ken, it's worth noting, you remember last year, of course, you and I went on in together in a pretty high price contest, and, it's kind of funny because you talked about the ebbs and flows. Remember, early on, we were a disaster, like 1-4. It was so hard to get a grip on the NFL. It was like almost to the point of like 5 or 6 weeks in, why are we even playing? Like, you know, we're just playing out the string. Yeah. Then suddenly we caught fire and ended up, what, 1 or 2 games short of the money? Yeah. Suddenly we were at 5-0, 5-0. And like, if we turned it around, I'm just glad we stuck with it because it shows you things can change.
And took some enormous bad beats, Josh. I mean, half-point losses when you're a 90% favorite, you know, halfway through the third quarter. I mean, things are just crazy. So these contests, like I said, not just the contests, but the touts. And, you know, I'm kind of educating the listeners. Be careful when people are touting you stuff and they're trying to take your money, saying they're picking 80%. It's not true. It's absolutely not true. Anybody's picking 80%, I can guarantee dadgum to you, they ain't selling their picks there because they don't want to affect the market. They're taking the best numbers. And the toughest pill to swallow in all of sports betting is the NFL. That's the toughest, toughest sport. NFL pre-flop numbers are the toughest thing in the world to be.
Well, you know what's funny, Ken? You mentioned that. It's something that I've expressed, I think, on this show and with what I do with Sportsline and other areas. But the NFL for sports books, in terms of the handicappers and the public and everything else, it's the ultimate, like, contrasting dynamic, being the NFL by far draws the more action than any other sport you can imagine. And it's the most difficult sport to beat, but it's the one that the most people believe that they are, you know, have a capability of mastering. So it's funny, right? So everyone and their brother runs, they sign up a contest or whatever, they bet, whether it's $20 or a couple hundred, whatever they can afford. But pretty much all football fans have this idea that they can, you know, beat the game, and yet NFL is consistently the most unbeatable. Therefore, of course, sportsbooks tend to enjoy the bottom line that comes with the NFL season.
Absolutely. I mean, I can see it. I mean, and it's still the most exciting and by far the most popular sport to wager on. But, you know, in-game is kind of where it's at for me right now. I do free pre-flop stuff in the NFL. I do pre-flop side and totals. I do a lot, but I love to enter the contest in the NFL because it's like you're saying, Josh, it's a minimal risk up front with the possibility that if I do get lucky over 18 or 17 weeks, I can really take down some cash. I mean, some good cash. Like you said, Josh, I mean, we were really close last year to cashing in a major tournament, and we ran bad, and I'm not crying over spilt milk by any means because, you know, I just think that there was some games where you just, like, how did that happen?
Totally.
I mean, I'm talking about being a 10-point favorite, leading in the third quarter, and blowing the game. I mean, right. Stuff like that just – but in the NFL, you know, things just bounce the wrong way sometimes. So, anyway, but that's where I was at last week, so thanks to everybody for covering me in week one of the NFL season. It's the first time I got to go down there, and I actually go in week two or three. I get my entries in down there in these big Vegas contests, and then go down 2 or 3 weeks later. But I had there was a horse show there, and we own a number of horses. Just bought another horse. $60,000 freaking horse. Can you believe that, Josh?
So, do you race them? Like, they're
competition horses. Right. So I drove the horses down on Wednesday last week. And Tiffany, my girlfriend, she's actually just pulled into town with the horses. So, all right. With that being said, Let's move on. The reason we're coming on early a little bit today is because of Game 1. Lakers, it's I guess it would be the NBA
Western Conference Finals.
Finals. The NBA and the absolutely surprise of the bubble and the postseason, the Denver Nuggets. I mean, can you believe what this team has accomplished in these first two playoff series, Josh? They lose Game 1 to the Houston, come back. Win the next four. They lose Game 1 to the Portland Trailblazers, come back and win the next four. Absolutely crazy. It's never been done in NFL history, or NFL. I got football on my mind. NBA history. And you look at these scores. I mean, they lose Game 1 to Houston, 112-97, a 15-point loss.
Referring to the Lakers or the Nuggets?
You're right. I got the wrong sheet in front of me. You're right. You're right. I'm talking about the Lakers. The Lakers lost both first games and then came back and won the next four. You're right, Josh. I'm looking at the wrong screen right now. But the Lakers lost their first game. And that's a little bit of a concern for me in this game tonight. You know, the Lakers lost 183 versus Portland and then come back and basically dismantled them the rest of the series. 111, 88, 116, 108, 135, 115, 131, 122. Then they play Houston, and everybody thought Houston was going to be their Achilles heel. They thought Portland kind of got lucky to advance. And then they come in and play Houston, and they lose to Houston by 15 in game one, 112-97. But after that, they pretty much took care of business, 117, 109. So 112, 102, 110, 100, and 119, 96. So you look like 10 plus point victories moving forward after first round losses. Denver, on the other hand, Josh, they were down 3. They were down 3-1 in both series too.
Right, which is a crazy thing, Ken. Like, I thought Denver looked good, last year. And remember, they had that pretty epic 7-game series against the Blazers for the right to go to the conference finals, and they ended up losing game 7 in Portland by a few points. And that's fine. It's one of those things with a true home court edge. That's why the Blazers basically came out on top. But I still thought Denver was the better team, and I was hoping they'd won that series because I thought they matched up with Golden State better. I wanted to see it. But you kept thinking Denver, I figured they would take a good step this year with pretty much everyone coming back and all that experience. My only concern in the bubble here, Ken, was like they're missing and continue to keep components from last year. They've had the injury bug, other guys playing a lot more minutes than normal, and I just didn't know if they had enough. And even in that first round series against the Jazz, it's like, these are pretty evenly matched, but it looks like the Jazz just have a few more horses. No wonder they're down 3-1. But Ken, a key factor is their defensive stopper who'd been out for months, Gary Harris, with an injury. They finally brought him back in their elimination game against the Jazz. It was his first game back, and he only played very limited. I just want to say like 20 minutes, but it goes to show you what a specialist on that end can do, help you get the key stops and energize you, because suddenly he's been back. They breathe some life. You'll find a way to get that series. And like you said, you had 2-3-1 deficits for the first time. And it was just crazy how the other night against the Clippers, with a proven champion like Kawhi Leonard and all the depth of talent that they have, it was pretty clearly Denver was a team with the players who weren't afraid of that stage. They played relaxed. The Clippers were so tight. It looks like they couldn't make a shot in the second half to save their lives. And so Denver's here by merit, but I just think I find it surprising only because I thought with all those injuries and whatnot, they would just do this, eventually bow and have to regroup again for next year. But it's clear they're already there with pretty much today's formula, right? That helps you out. Those two cornerstone guys, Jamal Murray, seems to get better with every game, and Nikola Jokic, who I still feel like until people watch the playoffs, he's underrated all year. You rarely see the Nuggets around. Suddenly they're on TV in the playoffs, and you realize just how gifted this guy is. Those two guys can carry them far enough, but it just seems like, as we see with the Lakers, can do in pretty much every game. If the Nuggets sort of have a third guy, like Paul Millsap's been huge, it's like he's found the fountain of youth, even though I think he's 34, 35 now. They've had a third guy step up, and basically, so if you can count on the two stars and get a third key contributor, I mean, they're in every game. So, yeah, I'm curious to see how they do against the Lakers.
Right now, the number is 7-210. 7-210. Going back to, like we were talking about, what they did in the first round, Denver, they won the first game versus the Jazz, lost the next three, and then won the next three. I mean, so, took it to seven games, down 3-1.
By the way, down 15 points in the third quarter of game 5. I mean, just about to be swept out of there, like gentlemen sweep, basically. And they found a way somehow, skin of their teeth, came back and won that one, and then went the rest of the way. It's crazy.
Then they lost the second. They lost the first game to the Clippers. Came back and won game 2. Then lost the next 2, and then beat them next 3. 111-105, 111-98, 104-89. This is the first time that any team has ever come back from a 3-1 deficit twice.
Right. And Ken, the crazier thing is in the second one against the Clippers, not only does most people believe there was a huge edge in talent on Los Angeles side there, but games 5, 6, and 7, the last three, double-digit deficits in both. Mm-hmm. There was times where I was just paying, like last weekend, I think was game 6. I wasn't really even paying attention. College football, everything going on. But I just sort of monitored the score and remember seeing, Clippers up like 16, 17 at halftime. Like, okay, taking care of business. We're going to get this Lakers-Clipper series everyone anticipates. And I didn't see till the end. I think I checked my phone or whatever and saw the Nuggets came back. I'm like, you're kidding. So it went like 16, 19, their deficits. And even the other night, even though both teams started slow, Ken, like, pretty close to not far from halftime, they were down 12. It was 50-38, and you're thinking, okay, if the Clippers really get in a groove here, a couple more stops and a couple buckets, maybe they could get close to putting this away. Instead, other way around, the Nuggets make a few shots, suddenly it's a two-point game at halftime, and I feel like at that point you sort of knew, the Clippers are in trouble again.
You can see it, absolutely can see it. So let's I do have an opinion on this next game, so let me let's go after our first commercial break. When we come back, we'll dig into maybe we have some opinions on this game, and then it'd be game 3 of the Celtics Heat series, which they keep making the wrong team the favorite here, Josh. So we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back on ESPN 94.5 FM.
Now back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, we're back on the Waymill Sports Show talking to Josh about my picks. Who did I tell you I had in the last man standing? Bills and Patriots. We got the Patriots. All right. Who's Patriots in week 1? So, okay, we're talking about NBA basketball right now. Game 1, we're on a little bit early today because game 1 of the Los Angeles Lakers Denver Nuggets series is on right after us. Number right now is 10. What did I say it was? 10 and, or excuse me, 7 and Lakers minus 7 and a total of 210. Here's kind of what I'm thinking, guys, and you got to come up with an angle and a philosophy when it comes to this. The Lakers, I know that they lost their first game in their first two series. I kind of think Denver, on the other hand, has. I think now something this is going to sound really, really crazy. I think something now they all of a sudden have something to play for in the playoffs. Did they really think they'd be in the Eastern Conference Finals, or excuse me, Western Conference Finals? Probably not. I mean, they were down 3-1 and came back. They're down 3-1 again and they came back. But now they're really playing for something. They're playing for the NBA spot in the NBA Finals, which I think that in a weird way, there's more pressure on them now than there was in the first two series. I do believe that. In the last series against the Clippers, Jokic by far was dominant in the middle. Absolutely. I mean, in the series, they played 7 games. He was the leading rebounder in 6 of those 7 games. The only game he wasn't the leading rebounder was in game 1 when Millsap was. And he only got 9 boards in that game. In the first series, he was the leading rebounder in 1, 2, 3 of the 7 games. My point here is the Lakers with McGee and Davis are much bigger than what they're used to seeing. And if you can take away some of the rebounding advantage in game 1 that the Nuggets are going to be going up against, I think the Lakers win this game. And I think you get a focused Laker team in here. And Josh, I was looking on Sportsline and what all of your great writers do. Every one of them is lined up on the Nuggets plus 7. Every single one of them. I'm going to turn that coin over. And I'm actually looking to play the Lakers here at minus 7. I think that you get a motivated Davis, you get a motivated Bron, and they come in and they're much bigger. And even if they have to rotate LeBron down on the blocks maybe to guard Jokic a little bit, I think he can hold his own defensively because he's so big and strong, and he can outjump him for sure. I just think this is a great spot where you play the Lakers. I'm not saying that I necessarily like the Lakers in game 2. I think some adjustments can be made. However, with the stage and this young Nuggets team going into a chance to make it to the NBA Finals versus a seasoned LeBron James, who is he's had more games like this than these other kids have even seen in their career. So I like the Lakers in game 1 at minus 7, and I could totally be wrong, but I'm going against a lot of experts, a lot of sharp people that think that they dismantled the Clippers. Yeah, I guess they did.
And I think you're right. It's just going with the trends of the Lakers having these slow starts in the series openers. But I agree. But especially the Lakers are the ones who are well rested, right? The Nuggets are on that emotional roller coaster without much physical and mental rest from that huge, epic comeback against the Clippers. And granted, I still think they're pros. I mean, they'll come and they'll show up. But I agree. I feel like this one, if the tides were going to turn on that trend, it would be here because, you know, like you mentioned, I just feel like it's natural for the Nuggets to be in sort of a letdown spot. And I feel like maybe the Lakers be determined to have learned their lessons from the previous series and come out strong for once.
You know, and I want to toss this in too, Josh. I remember after the Nuggets series with Utah, and after they went to that game seven where they went 80-78. I mean, you remember that game. And then they come in. That was on September 1st.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, I mean, that looked like a college. There was no points in the second half.
Right. 80-78. Probably the lowest score. Yeah, I guess it was an 96-85 game in the second series. But where I'm headed with this is that game was on a Tuesday on September 1st. They played that seven-game grueling matchup versus Utah. Then they came back and played the Clippers. They only got one day rest. They come back and play the Clippers and absolutely get dismantled 120-97. And I had a man-sized bet on the Clippers in that game. And believe me, this game was 120-97, a 23-point blowout. This game wasn't even that close. I mean, if you remember, I think they were up by 35 at a couple of points in that game, and they were able to cut it later. And I'm kind of using that in my handicapping angle here also. You know, they beat the Clippers 104-87. 2 days ago, you know, to clinch another game seven, you know, Lakers have been sitting on the sideline for a long time and a lot of rest. I mean, I think you got a lot fresher legs in L.A. right now.
For sure. And I'm curious just to see how the Lakers, you know, look tonight. I think the key thing for them is, you know, similar to the Nuggets, we could always depend on, right, LeBron, Anthony Davis, where they're going to do their thing, put up pretty big numbers, but they need at least a third regular contributor. For a while, there was a struggle. Now, how they took over those series, one guy who's really stepped up, of course, was Rajon Rondo. That the backcourt was a little thin with their best defender, Avery Bradley, opted out. And Rondo has that championship pedigree with Boston, and they didn't even – you know, I think you realize how valuable he could be, where he's such a willing, you know, passer and defender, and he's the type of guy who helps pull you through playoff games. So he has stepped up big time, but also occasionally, like you mentioned, you throw in a couple – you know, if Kyle Kuzma somehow gives you 15 or Danny Green gives you 15. So if you just basically get a little peripheral help, the Lakers are just fine. But it's just, you know, it's those games where one, either, you know, if it's just all LeBron and Davis and nobody else, they're in trouble. Or if one of those two struggle, they're usually in trouble because you got to have the other guys. But lately, it looks like they've been getting that balanced output, which was pretty much what they expected when they compiled this roster before the season.
I agree with that. I think that, you know, the dismantling of the Rockets by LA just kind of maybe the Lakers can turn the switch and maybe they will. I mean, I'm with you, Caldwell Pope. I mean, he played 28 minutes in that last game. I mean, you know, Kuzma's got 20. He played 27.
Yeah.
So I mean, they do have a lot of guys that are going to be there. I just think the Lakers have a larger margin of error, if you can understand what I'm saying. If you could just get Anthony Davis to maybe 12, 10, and 4, and shut down Jokic. I mean, that's a huge game for him because I think without Murray or Jokic, Denver can't win. So
yeah, it's tough. And you're right. I think the size thing, it's funny because he's so versatile, but for sure, some of those moves he's getting away with, like even – you know, against some of the smaller teams,
Davis is a lot longer, too.
Yeah, I mean, right. He's going to get out physical. I was going to say, his only chance is, you know, if he more or less stays on the perimeter or whatnot. But some of those moves where he sort of bulldozes his way and is all up and under and his creativity, yeah, I just think physically he probably won't be able to get those as much. But he's also, as you've seen, they run the offense through more or less kind of a point forward or whatever. I just feel like his court presence is amazing, though. Whenever he catches it, he knows, you know, which direction the double's coming from.
Yep.
And the thing with the hockey assist where he knows the swing and then the extra swing. And he's just so skilled at doing that. I feel like, you know, he'll still be effective. But, yeah, the physical mismatch for sure is there. And, again, I mentioned Millsap. He was huge. You realize the guy forever ago, he used to be like top five NBA, you know, in rebounding on a regular basis. He's a physical guy. He's going to need to come in there and put up some numbers on the boards.
You know, and if they want to have – you see Jokic a lot bring the ball up. You know, they'll just say, LeBron, get him. I mean, he's not going to overpower LeBron like he did a lot of these other guys.
Exactly.
He may do it once, but once he's got Bron's attention, game changer.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder, what they're going to do with the defensive switches on Murray. One thing people don't realize, because they figure, oh, Murray is known for, you know, his three-point shooting at this particular juncture, and he seems like a guy who can just catch fire and change the game, which is true. But, you know, sometimes, Ken, when they fly out at Murray, he's really good at sort of the blow-by and the little floater in the paint, and they've got to be aware of that. I'm just curious whether it's Rondo or whoever else. Whoever D's up on Murray, I mean, he's more than just the guy who can beat you from the outside. He can get in the paint as well, and I'm curious if they try some more physicality on him to keep him out of the paint.
All right, well, there we have it. That game's right after our show. Right now it sits at the Lakers -7 with a total of 210. Every wise guy in the world is on the +7. I'm not saying I'm a wise guy. I might be the only guy out there that's openly saying that I think the Lakers are gonna cover this game. I really do.
Told Josh? You, I like it as well. Like you said, the ultimate contrarian. You mentioned Sportsline, but also if you just go to Twitter and all the handicapping type outlets you might follow, like you mentioned, you'll see pretty much 90% will be saying they're jumping in on the Nuggets tonight. But I kind of like it the other way too, pretty much for that reason. Like, it's just where everyone's lining up on one side.
They're not just giving away money.
Exactly.
I mean, they use the math to make the line.
Exactly.
Nick Bogdanovich usually isn't that far off. It does happen occasionally, but usually it's on a lot less isolated game than game one of the West Coast NBA Finals. If that makes sense, Josh. All right. Game three of the Boston series. Boston is a 3-point favorite with a total of 206. The Heat storm back from two big deficits, and they're going to come back and make Boston 3-point. How surprised are you that Boston's in the NBA East Finals? I mean, absolutely crazy. I mean, they get it done. They never quit. Their defense in the second half. Listen, download the Wim Hill mobile app at www.wimhill.us. It's a full-service sports mobile app at your fingertips. And look at the in-play. There's so much money to be made in in-play right now. So much. I destroy in-play. You get one of these teams that are down a lot, i.e., the Heat. When they get down 16, just take the +15. They might be a favorite to win the game. You got mic'd up, and I never did get.
That's all right. It's all good.
What Laker? Real quick, Lakers Rockets. I mean, Lakers Nuggets.
I like the Lakers in game one.
Yeah.
Even with Denver's extended time off in between this series and the Clippers series, because they got a day or two more in between this series.
Not just one game.
Yeah. Exactly. Jamal Murray got his couple days off this time around. But yeah, I agree. I think the Lakers take game one. I am interested to see, though, how Jokic and Anthony Davis evolve over the series. I think it's going to be a wake-up call that first game when he does try to lower his shoulder and get to the rim and they don't let him. But that could be a fun one to watch overall. But I got the Lakers in game one.
And not even if they just put – not even if it's – I think if he goes down low, it'll be Davis. But if he's going to stay on the perimeter, it has to be LeBron.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Davis is fast enough on the perimeter to guard him. LeBron is, but if he gets down low in a less isolated area with people in traffic, I do think Davis can stay with him.
Yeah, I think you made a good point, Kenny. If Jokic starts to bring the ball up too much, then just send LeBron sprinting out after him. But I also like Anthony Davis's reach. I mean, if Jokic is just standing, if he's just beyond the 3-point line, just have Anthony Davis go out there and contest. Yeah. It's going to make it tough.
Or you get the Jokic spin move, or his step back. Davis is long enough.
No look passes over the head.
Yeah, and Davis is long enough that even if he does get a half step on him down low, he can still block him from behind because he's so long.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. And Jokic's probably going to have to go do his creative bag of tricks. Some stuff's crazy with that guy. Like I said, his shot-making difficulty. But his footwork is amazing and his balance or whatnot. But he has that one sort of fall away like you might sort of compare it to Dirk, except it's different because the whole thing is he purposely goes off the wrong foot just to fool the defender. So there'll be times where it looks like he's driving baseline, you cut him off, and you think, standard fall away would pretty much be the direction of the baseline where he's coming at you. And then suddenly he falls off, and it almost looks like an accident, and that high archer. It's like, no, he falls away off the wrong foot on purpose just to fool with you. Like, with Vlade back in the day, Ken, he would use those, some of his moves, his quick misdirection, but it was almost like a jab in boxing. You're not expecting. He goes one way, fakes one way, and then punches the other. It was the art of deception that even made him effective because he was, not the most gifted athletically. But that's what you see with Jokic. It's just crazy. You're like, shot clock winding down. He's not going to get anything off. Suddenly, steps back and throws one up there. The rainmaker almost hits the ceiling, and it goes in all the time.
I literally, as we're speaking right now, just bet a nickel on the Lakers at -7.
All right, cool.
Just literally as we're talking about it, I bet a nickel on it. And if you don't believe, because you can even look at the time on my ticket. I'm going to post it on our Facebook page right now just so you guys know that I am wagering on this game. You can look at the time. I just bet it. The game starts at 6:10. Oh, it doesn't tell you when I made the bet. Well, I just made it. I can tell you right now. So the game's at 6:10, but I just bet a nickel. I just bet a nickel at -7. I know people like to say, "Oh, these guys don't bet. They don't." Well, here, I just posted it on our Facebook page. Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. I just bet a nickel at -7. Mm-hmm. And people are going to say, "How much is a nickel?" Go look and see.
Exactly. And if it's one of those things, though, Ken, but anyone who follows it regularly, if they have checked out the page, have seen that we regularly post tickets. And to me, honestly, if you bet, like, I don't care what your level of your passion or hobby or money-making endeavors are. It's like, yeah, even if it's just $5, you've got action. Now, let's face it, I think most of us, especially you and I'd say myself, are more on the intermediate level of how of both handicapping and how much we're willing to risk. But to me, like I said, but I don't judge a $5 better as like lower than me.
Oh, neither do I.
But my point, and I know you don't, Ken, but my point is this, right? You're always going to get the skeptics like, oh, sure, you guys just talk a bunch. Oh, do you bet anything? But my point was that anyone who's followed your Facebook page consistently or knows us personally is well aware. We post tickets all the time, and they tend to not be just little piddly ones, but we do put our money where our opinions are. So if you're curious where our stance really is, you'll see these tickets and, wow, these guys for sure aren't bluffing when it comes to how much they bet.
$10,000 on McGregor, or no, excuse me, on Floyd to beat McGregor. We posted that one, 250.
It's funny, Ken, I've got a story that you might like. It's about you.
Hold on. Okay, we got to go to commercial break. Okay. So you got a story. We'll talk about that. But man, we got to get into NFL too. So we're back after these messages on ESPN 94.5 FM.
Now back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, we're back at the ESPN studios on ESPN 94.5. Tommy Thompson he finally pulled up during the break. So welcome, Tommy.
Thanks for having me.
Is he mic'd up and he's okay? Good to go. All right, Josh, we're talking about sports wagering or something. You said you had a story. I told you not to tell me because I wanted to hear the story live.
Oh, cool.
Hopefully so, it's not bad.
No, it's not at all. It's just, believe me, as the gambling lore goes, I think it's actually a pretty good one. But this is going back many years. I remember it was around the playoffs. One of the very first shows I did when I was just sort of a fill-in guy, whatever, and we were talking about props. I remember it was about the NFL playoffs because we were getting toward the end. In fact, I believe that was cap era, 49ers glory type of thing when he led them to the Super Bowl, and we were going to, I think it was like NFC Championship game or whatever. We're going over the whole tablet book of props and what's good and whatnot. And so I think you asked me, oh, what kind of props stand out to you? Do you see anything on here? And I mentioned one of them, and again, I couldn't tell you what it was. I think it might have been longest rush by Cap or somebody has some prop, like very basic thing, over under on his rushing yards or something like that. And I mentioned,
was this a Super Bowl show?
No, I believe, like I said, I think it was championship game type of thing.
Okay.
And I just said something like, yeah, I like that prop. I think he goes over on his longest rush or whatever. And you're like, yeah, you know what? I think I like that too. I'm going to go up and make a bet on the break. Or I was like, okay, that's cool. I knew you guys bet, but I didn't know like how much or whatever, what league we were all in with that type of thing. And so you went up to the, and what was it? You went up to the counter at the break, and you're doing your bet thing. I didn't know what you were going to bring back, but we were actually at one of the outposts. What's the smaller place in Sparks that we?
JJ's.
Yes, it was one of them out there. And so,
another Wind Hill Sports.
Yeah, you're like, hey, I'm just going to jump on this. And in fact, you say, oh, it's a good call, and I want to jump on this before, like, the point spreads, like the yardage can change. Suddenly, longest rush might go from 15 to 19 if everyone's betting on it. So they just released, and you said, I want to get this sucker before, the spread goes up. I'm like, all right, cool. So you came back just before we came back on. I saw your ticket, and I was like, all right. It was like 500, which is the max on a prop. I think you told me you went up there and asked him what was the max you could bet. I was like, yeah. All right. I'm not questioning if these guys bet seriously or not.
We're just sitting here spitting out stories, and he goes and makes a max limit on a prop that he didn't even know about.
But now I'm dying. 20 like, seconds I know, ago. I'm like, now this better win. So the very first time you've trusted one of my bets, I'm like, okay, I cannot lose the first one. He'll never trust me again.
But and I won.
It did win. Yeah.
I think it was a no-brainer.
It was. It was a good one.
All right. Week two of the NFL season, like I said, a bunch of upsets in week one. I'm still in good shape in all my contests. I advanced in week one in the last man standing. One of the key things to remember is don't overreact in week one. There's a lot of uncertainties, especially this year with the lack of preseason games and where we're headed. But I do remember this, listeners. I do remember looking at the week two lines before week one had even kicked off. And I thought week two is going to be a lot tougher week than week one. And there have been some major line moves in week two, Josh, John. I mean, Josh.
For sure. Yeah, like you mentioned, Ken, it's pretty much from the minute they open up those spreads, which is often like Sunday afternoon while the games you're watching are going on, many sports books, they can't get them out fast enough these days. The demand's there, so suddenly live spreads for the following week, and in no time at all, you'll see where the money, of course, kind of shapes the future of all these spreads, and you can get a pretty good idea of where the action's already been.
right, I'm just gonna. We'll just start with my list is gonna be kind of hodgepodge because I left my parlay card on my desk, so I actually don't know the rotation of the games. So I'm gonna pull up. I'm gonna fire up my William Hill mobile app and go right down the games. The first game Nick has listed for Sunday, obviously a 10 a.m. game, is the Bears minus 5.5 with a total of 42.5. Let me look and see. I had all this on my on my desk. I'm curious of what these, because there's some major line moves right now. Where's the Bears on this? Anyways, Josh, go ahead.
Sure.
Oh, there it is right there. This opened up at 5.5 and 43, so this is not one of the games where there was a major line move. It looks like the side is still at 5.5. The total with a full point move down towards the under.
Right, not at all, Kenji Ray. So it's pretty much stayed the same. But I would say on this one, honestly, I think the Bears are going to be pretty decent this year, better than I think people expect. But last week I kind of liked them. Of course, it took whatever, a near miracle. They did come back in the final minutes. But, actually Trubisky always plays well against the Lions. And he had huge numbers again. This one here, it's interesting, though. I think feel like the Giants probably aren't as bad as this line indicates. Meaning, I mean, I feel like it should probably be Bears more like -3. And it's one of those deals where I think I'd look to play Chicago more like last week when they are an underdog. I think they'll give some value there. But as a nearly basically close to touchdown chalk at home here, to me, I would just pretty much have to consider taking those points.
Yeah, I'd probably take those points. But, I mean, with if you get the Khalil Mack and everybody rushing like the Steelers did to that offensive line on Monday Night Football, it's going to be a long day versus Saquon Barkley yet again. So. A little bit closer to that 5 probably does look good.
Well, you have the Dallas Cowboy legend right there calling the plays for you. You got Jason Garrett on the sideline to just, I think what did he have? What did he end up with? Did he end up with less than 10 yards rushing in week 1? I know it was small.
It was 6 yards, 16 rushes, 6 yards,
something like that. Yeah, that's what I remember too. And I know that I was talking to Jeff, a real sharp guy out of Vegas. We actually had that game over and we take a bad beat. The one drive where Daniel Jones does drive the
6 yards
rushing. Exactly. I thought it was less than 10. Yeah. So Daniel Jones, we lose the bet because the Giants drive right down the field on one of their possessions at first and goal at the 2, and Daniel Jones throws an interception.
And it was just a weird flutter
I don't know what happened.
It was the ugliest pass.
And
it
terrible.
Wasn't tipped or anything. It was just an ugly.
Well, actually, I think it was. Well, his arm got hit on it. That's why it fluttered up there. But the thing is, he just had time. The play was in so much trouble. It was clear the right thing to do was just throw it away at the marker right away. Instead, he took 3 more steps from the point where he should have thrown it to the point where a guy came in and did contact his elbow and made it flutter like that. It's goofy because that changed the whole complexion of it, right? I mean, the Giants might cover. I mean, they were competitive. That was a huge swing, not getting any score, and then the Steelers went down and scored. But I also think it sort of clouds the fact that aside from that, Jones played okay. I mean, he's in a tough spot. I feel like not entirely like Joe Burrow, where it's like,
I thought he played well.
Burrow looked great. I got to say, I mean, he impressed me. I just feel right now he's already better than whoever else, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield. I mean, he's clearly.
He seems like it, doesn't he?
Unbelievable because you realize what he's dealing with, too. Just a completely, milquetoast offensive line, and sort of limited weapons. And he looks like he's carrying them already. With Daniel Jones, I feel sort of the same way, especially with Saquon Barkley. It's not like, and I think Barkley's obviously he's gifted, he's great, but it's not like Derrick Henry just plows ahead and you can just have the physicality. But he is that sort of Barry Sanders type hit or miss where it's either going to be like a 70-yard run or a 5-yard loss. And if you somehow box him in like the Steelers did, I mean, he can't help you establish the run. So with all that, and the Giants with some injuries as well, having somewhat limited weapons, I think Jones is doing about as well as can be expected. He has poor protection, limited options on the outside, and he's doing all right.
It's crazy. In his post-game interview, he was talking about, I don't accept losing. I never will accept losing. He goes, as a matter of fact, I think this is the first time in my entire life where I've ever lost 2 games in a row, ever. Wow. Of course. Well, I mean, if you're that elite of an athlete, NFL quarterback type of athlete, no matter really how good the talent is around you, you're going to stand out.
Yep.
So anything on this? So you kind of like the what game were we talking about here? I'm getting my numbers together.
Bears 5.5.
And Giants. 6. Right.
I would only have the Giants here. There's nothing. There's nothing that makes me feel that the Bears are going to dominate this game. And 5.5 is just too many points. It opened at 5.5. Like I said, it's still at 5.5. I'm going to be on the other side of this game, if anything. And I really would like to tease the Giants up into a situation where I'm going to get them over a touchdown. I just think it's a low-scoring game. You look at the total moving a half point down, so there's a little bit more value, obviously, in the built into the dog in this spot. So for me, this would be the Giants teased up over a touchdown. and maybe take a little bit of the 5.5. This is a game where, I mean, I think plus 220 on the money line, I'm not convinced the Giants can't win this game. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, you forced Daniel Jones to throw, like you said, he didn't have an overly terrible game. Good things could happen.
Yeah, to me, it strikes me as one of those, by the way, you know, sometimes we discuss six-point teasers and their value in the NFL. And how many of those games, because the spreads are so tight and generally accurate, where all four positions win, I think this could be one of them. Meaning, you know, if you tease the Bears basically down to a pick 'em, took the Giants with 12.5 and tease the total 6.5 points on both sides, one of those things that's just bound to fall right in the middle, right, where it's like, yeah, Bears by three, it's like 24-21 and all four. And it's worth noting the William Hill teaser card, that's a 4-to-1 payout. That's worth doing. I'm like, seriously, look at these games that look super tight and you like the matchup and you're having a hard time. Take the 6.5 point teaser on all four sides and enjoy that 4-to-1 off the app.
Why not?
That's Bill's probably the right game to do it on.
Bill's Dolphins right now, William Hill's at 5.5 with a total of 41. This line opened at 3.5 and 43. So you actually see a 2-point move on both the side and the total. The Bills open at 3.5. They're up to 5.5. The Dolphin and the total opened at 43. It's down to 41. This Bills defense is legit. Josh Allen is legit. I think Fitzpatrick looked absolutely horrible in week one. I think that it's getting close to Tua time. But I kind of have the thought that, you know, right now the Patriots can still play a little bit of defense. The Bills can play a little bit of defense. I think that what we're looking at right now is maybe one more game for Fitz, and then I think Tua comes in and he makes his NFL debut, especially after you see how well Joe Burrow's played. You know, his college equivalent basically has played in these first two games. I like the Bills here, guys. I agree with the line move, but I'm priced out of it at 5.5. I like I said, I don't have a parlay card here, so I don't remember what Nick used on the parlay card. Unfortunately, I'm unprepared on that. But it's either going to be the Bills at a lower number at or a pass for me. But I have no interest in the Miami Dolphins.
I kind of like Buffalo in this one too, Ken, because you mentioned in. You have it right in front of you. I'm pretty sure they've dominated this series the past few years. They just match up well. Miami's generally limited on offense, and Buffalo's been able to clamp down on defense. I'm pretty sure they blew them out in Miami last year as well. But the thing with Fitzpatrick, it's funny because I got a buddy who's a diehard Dolphins fan, and you would talk about the team here and there, and we do a fantasy league together. But and he was pretty disappointed in everything. Because I think he actually played Fitzpatrick last week. He's like, oh, it's cheap, and he's put up some big numbers. I'm like, yeah, I realize. Well, that guy's entire career, this is how it goes. Like, when he's like the second, third string guy no one's ever heard of and everyone else gets hurt, he goes in there. And suddenly he's just lighting it up. Like, you wouldn't believe what he did the same thing when Jameis Winston went down with the Bucs a few years ago. But then suddenly when he's the guy where it's like, no, it's stated, we're sticking with him, right? Remember, Winston came back, but said, no, Fitz, we're doing the whole hot hand thing and sticking with him. But suddenly when he's like preordained as the guy and under that pressure, he just turns cold. I mean, suddenly that's where he's back to, you know, 140 yards and three picks, and it's just weird. He seems to only do well when the pressure's at the least. But I also agree, Ken, that I doubt Tua will be seen this quickly.
He's kind of like Saquon Barkley, where you're either going to get unbelievable statistics and he's going to carry the team on his back, or it's just a dumpster fire and just pick after pick and – you know, terrible reads and everything. And that's, I mean, he didn't look all that dumpster fire last week, but he wasn't good. And against a mediocre Patriots defense that actually, I think, played a little better than anybody really anticipated.
They can still play D. You know, so. They certainly can still play D.
Yeah, but if I'm going to bet this game, I'll probably tease the Bills down.
All right, next game we have on the William Hill mobile app is the Colts and the Vikings. Colts are currently at -3 and 48.5. This is a line move that I don't understand. This opened up at 2.5 on the Colts and has moved up to a -3 on the Vikings. It's another game. Opened at 46 is for the total, and it's up to 48.5. So you have a 2.5-point move on the total of north. And then you have, in my opinion, you have what?
I have the Vikings +3.
I said that, Colts -3.
I thought right. I heard it the other way.
Wait, so it only moved a 1/2 point then? So
yeah, you're saying, 1/2 point on the side.
Gotcha.
Half point on the side, and a 2.5-point move on the total.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Did I say that wrong?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But
I don't agree with the line move in this game. Right. Now that the numbers got to 3, I'll be taking the Vikings. And if any more money comes on, I'll be betting a little bit more on the Vikings.
I agree. We saw it last week, and it's not as if I'm playing, you know, prisoner of the moment or whatever, because I thought so ahead of time. That being, well, you guys know my stance on Phillip Rivers. He's not Joe Montana. I mean, why suddenly everyone believe the Colts are like everyone's, you know, spur of the moment Super Bowl pick or whatever, or dark horse to break out. I disagree. I don't think they're a whole lot better than they were last year, which was okay. I mean, they've gotten better, you know, a little bit on defense. I mean, they improved through the draft. They did a couple of things, but the whole idea that Phillip Rivers coming in, I mean, is he really going to be more effective than Jacoby Brissett? He was up to his old tricks last week with costly turnovers, and the guy that for some reason when you're in that tight game like he was with the Chargers all those years, never, he's in that situation a lot, rarely comes out the victor. I just feel like, yeah, the Colts are vastly overrated, and I like Minnesota too.
Yeah, I'll take the Vikings all day long on this. And I think the Phillip Rivers infatuation is the Colts actually have a pretty decent offensive line, and I think that's what everybody always said is, oh, you give him an offensive line and he'll do good things. Well, he has one now, and he looked very pedestrian, like you said, Jacoby Brissett.
And then they just lose Marlon Mack for the year, which is worth noting. He's a physical, effective back. You can't – yeah, that's a big loss on offense.
All right. I'm getting my clock up right now because we have to go to – we have to – are we going to 57?
Yeah, 15 seconds.
56. Okay. Those are the first few games we handicap already. We're going to go through the rest of the slate, but it's one of those times where I kind of got confused with the time because we're at an earlier time, so we have to go after traffic. So we'll be back after these messages on ESPN 94.5 FM.
Now, back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, we're back for the second of the last segment of the William Hill Sports Show, handicapping week two of the NFL season on a little bit early because of the Lakers-Nuggets game one of the Western Conference Finals coming up after the show. Right now, Lakers are minus -7 with a total of 210. I already fired. I gave out the Lakers on the show, and I backed up my my wager. You can check it out on Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. That's our Facebook page, Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. I bet a nickel on the Lakers at minus -7. I'm going to just let you guys know up front. If you don't believe me, go check it out at Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. Lions, Packers. Packers minus -6.5, total of 49.5. Lions, Packers. I left my notes on my desk. All right, Green Bay opened up at minus -6, so we have a half point move on the Packers. And then you look at this total, guys. 46 is where this opened up. It's up to 49.5. So you have a three and a half point move on the side. Detroit should have won last week. You got a rookie running back dropping a pass in the end zone that hit him. I mean, he's got to make that catch. If you can't make that catch, you have no reason even being drafted in the NFL. And it's one of those, you know, Stafford made a perfect throw, but Trubisky completed the 21 point. That's how we lost the games last year to cost us money, Josh. It's exact. We have pick'ems, and we have teams like the Chicago Bears scoring 21 unanswered in the fourth quarter. Talking about our bad luck in our big contest last year. But you know, I'm looking at this game right now. It's another one of those tough games, guys. I mean, are the Packers as good as they're supposed to look? They're going home. Great. Aaron Rodgers looked rejuvenated. Maybe the fact that they went out and drafted a quarterback got his attention. Devontae Adams went off last week. But then you have Detroit coming on the road. If this gets to 7, I hate to say, guys, it's a take for me. This is the black and blue division, and if I can get the Detroit Lions at plus a touchdown, I'm going to be on Detroit.
Yeah, I think I'd have to do that as well, considering, like you mentioned, there might be a little overreaction to what Green Bay did last week, but for sure the Rodgers thing, and he made basically no mistake about it when they asked him, hey, were you offended they drafted a quarterback? He's like, hey, they can do what – I remember his quote about, yeah, they can do whatever they want, but nobody they bring in here now is going to beat me out in the near future, which is true. But he also wasn't wild about it because, yeah, it wasn't a position of need. I think it was more so that. Not that they brought in a quarterback, because with a high first pick, they didn't address the many issues of need they did have, which was improving run game, improving on defense, more weapons on the out, someone other than Adams, who's a legit – because it's like Adams and everyone else. The other guys, Scanley, and all the other guys are like just sort of journeyman, sure-handed guys who aren't game breakers. And so I think he was more upset that they just didn't improve the rest of the team. But he's coming out there to make a statement for sure. You know, last week he did. But as you mentioned, at least in recent matchups as well, Detroit's stuck right there with Green Bay, and 7 for sure is a take.
You know, real quick, Tom, before I throw it up to you, Green Bay had the most offensive yards last week at 522 offensive yards. Don't forget, though, even though in a loss, Detroit put up 426.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's not a bad number. And as far as the defense is concerned, Detroit, they gave up 363 yards of total offense on defense. However, Green Bay gave up 382, so that came in at number 22. So it's like if I can get Detroit in the team down a game versus the team up a game, pretty comparable offensive stats. And the team I'm getting 7 points with had a better defensive showing after week one, listeners, after week one. I'm in love with taking seven here.
Exactly, and I like the seven and the fact that, you know, the Packers lost their right guard. Somebody else sat out all week due to injury on that offensive line. So, I mean, that, you know, Rodgers is getting old. He did great last week, but you get after him and he doesn't have a full protection in front of him, you know, he's not going to have that success. And I'll take 7 points all day long.
All right. 49ers and the Jets. This opened up at 6. San Francisco traveling to play the Jets on the road. Total opened up at 43.5, total of 41.5. Le'Veon Bell's out this week. The wide receiver, Jamison Crowder's out this week for the Jets.
George Kittle's out.
Kittle's out?
Yep.
Well, Tommy, respectfully, in this spot, you got a Niners team that was in the Super Bowl last year. They had a hangover in week one. The Jets are in for a world of hurt this week.
I agree.
A world of hurt. And I think that this is one of those teams, this is one of those games I'm going to put in my 16 favorite and over, even though it's on the road. Niners get healthy this week, boys. Niners in a blowout.
I think the Niners bounce back real good. I think any rushing props on that game I like big time as well. And I think this is, like you said, it's a bounce-back game. I said last week, the Cardinals always, for the last 3 years, have played the 49ers super tough. I didn't expect them to win, but on every ticket I had the Cardinals plus 7.5. So, Josh?
Yeah, I think for sure, like over the past few years, this is one of the few spots where the Jets, I say, are somewhat reliable. Remember, I think they beat, you know, Dallas last year at home. Like, they tend to get fired up as a home underdog. But under the circumstances, put it this way, if the Niners had won easily last week, I might take the Jets to cover here. But instead, I agree with the whole sort of wounded, you know, animal theory that the Niners pretty disappointed that
their season's on the line, Josh, right, after week two.
They let it slip away.
You know, and why? Again, like, because look how good the Rams looked in week one.
Right. And look how it seems like it's falling apart, though, with the Jets, where it looks as though, I mean, Adam Gase is, you know, top on the odds as first NFL coach to be fired during the season. Looks like it's just not working out for him there. The Le'Veon Bell thing's just been a disaster. I mean, he didn't do anything for them when healthy, and now, you know, he's banged up as well. And, again, I believe Sam Darnold is just whatever. I mean, pretty close to bust status, even though some people really seem to like his potential. But it's just too error-prone and critical time. So I do think this would be the get-back time for the Niners, and I think they should roll.
All right. The Jet, that was the Jets and the Niners. Next thing in my William Hill mobile app, we have the Steelers minus 7 with a total of 40.5. Big Ben shook off the rust. It took him a little bit of a while, but they looked like the Steelers they were supposed to. This opened up at 5.5, so we have a point and a half move towards the side. Pittsburgh at home went from 5.5 to a flat 7, and the total's down 3 points, actually, from 43.5 was the opener down to 40.5. This is a Pittsburgh. That defense in Pittsburgh is filthy. It's good enough to win the Super Bowl this year. I think Big Ben, it took him about a quarter and a half, maybe 2.5 quarters, to finally get things going. Juju Schuster looks good. Connor is out, but Benny Snell, man, he picked up the slack. And I think that he looked so good last week that this could be a timeshare. Even though Tomlin likes to say he doesn't want a running back committee, he wants a bell cow running back. But how are you going to keep Benny Snell on the sidelines? This is a teaser play for me. I mean, if I can get Pittsburgh at home in a situation just to win, I don't think this young quarterback for Denver can go on the road and beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh.
I agree. I mean, Denver did everything they could to give that game away, and they finally did, you know, with that last second field goal on Monday night.
Well, only because they can't make field goals or extra points. That's the most atrocious place kicking I've ever seen from a Pro Bowl kicker.
Yeah, but that being said, Denver should have handily won that game. Yes, that being said, but I like the Steelers big time here. And like you said, it was the second quarter. Ben got hit big time and then bounced up. And after that,
he's ready to rock.
Yeah, it was.
He goes,
old school
I'm gonna
Ben.
Be a little bit sore. Yeah. He goes, but I'm back.
Yeah, and that's what it took, that muscle memory of getting hit and going, oh, I could do this. This doesn't hurt.
Yeah, and like you mentioned with the running game, Snell not only emerged, but he looks like the more explosive guy, like Connor. You know, sort of you could say the fire and ice, you know, combo type of thing, but Connor's okay, but he's just a physical guy, sort of between the tackles, whatever, and he's not bad, but he doesn't have that explosiveness. There was a clear next gear for Snell, both on his rushes and some of the passes he caught out of the backfield. That guy's a game breaker. Like you said, Ken, I don't know how you could keep him off the field. As the teaser play goes, I would agree if you got the Steelers, if you just pretty much wiped out that spread and took them down to pick them. I'd like that position. But having said that, you know, if I just had to pick the full overall game spread, I think there's some value on Denver just because I think they are improving on offense. They should have, you know, their lead receiver supposed to be back, who missed Monday night, Cortland Sutton. And, you know, they've got some decent pieces there, too.
Philip Lindsay's out, too, so it looks like Melvin Gordon's going to get the lion's share of the ring. Okay. Well, not, I'm just bringing that up.
No, that's good, too, because he helps them out, too. That's the thing with Lindsay is he's fragile. He's a tiny guy. Yeah. And so that's why he gets banged up. So that's why the Gordon signing was probably pretty smart for them. And so, yeah, so I've just picked over. Their chances of covering seven, I would like. But I could see Steelers on a teaser.
All right. Eagles-Rams. Eagles currently minus one, total of 46. This opened up. Believe it or not, this opened up, and I can 100% see the line move here. This opened up at Philadelphia minus 3.5. It's 2.5 point down to the Eagles minus one, total of 46. Eagles last week, they looked fantastic in the first half and got destroyed in the second half. The Rams beat the Cowboys Sunday night. It is a great game. It is what it is. Did you guys know that Carson Wentz got sacked 8 times in that game?
I did
not. 8 times.
No.
Well, Aaron Donald, you're getting ready to get paid. Right. If you have a sack incentive in your contract, step up to the plate, big boy.
I was going to say not terribly surprised, only because Wentz is – it's weird because he's an athletic guy, and his running ability and his physicality were like all parts of his strength when he came out of college. And his first couple of years when he was doing pretty well, he was the type of guy who, sort of like Roethlisberger, was kind of a bruiser, not super athletic, but he'd, you know, let guys bounce off of him, and he found a way to keep plays alive. But ever since he had that injury where he missed most of the season and came back, it seems like his mobility is not the same. But I've also said this from the start – it looks like he's got that mentality. We're kind of seeing ghosts in the pocket type of thing. Like he anticipates sometimes the rush when it isn't there. Sometimes he gets sacked so much as one of those where a lot of times he kind of gives up before they get to him and he starts going down before he gets hit. I really think he's got that super gun-shy mentality now that he's been hurt and, you know, doesn't want to put himself in that position again. Yeah, I'm not really impressed with Wentz at all, even though it's bizarre. Like, because, you know, last year, Ken, he also set a record. I think the first quarterback in NFL history, I believe this is the stat, to throw for 4,000 yards or more without a single receiver who hit 500 yards. That was an issue, too. They were so banged up. So they should be better from a standpoint. Miles Sanders is back after missing last week. So a good, explosive running back. They're getting some key guys. Lane Johnson's back. The offensive tackle was always injured. But it's crazy what their record is with him versus without. He's a huge part of the protection. So even though I'm sort of torn on, you know, not exactly a Wentz guy, I feel like, you know, this is close to, you know, a must win for the Eagles. So I sort of lean with them. I mean, you're right. It went from they were a huge favorite down to pick them back to Eagles minus one. Yeah. And I think inside of 3 points, I mean, I'd like the Eagles.
There's some dissension with Zach Ertz, too, there. Let's not forget that. And then, Josh, going back to what you said about, I think that with the Giants losing, Dallas losing, Washington's ahead of the NFC right now, or that division of the NFC, I don't think it's quite as much as a must win because Dallas still has a tough game playing the Falcons. Mm-hmm. You know, but I like the Rams. I like the Rams in this game. I mean, not down at one. The value's out the window. So it's going to be a pass, especially when I could have gotten a fantastic key number at 3.5. I can't bet the Rams in this spot. If anything, it's going to be a pass for me.
Yeah, if anything, I would maybe tease the Rams just to win it outright. Yeah.
Tease the Rams over touchdown.
Yeah, so.
All right, Panthers and Buccaneers right now. Tampa Bay is minus 8, 8.5. Total is 48. Brady didn't look good last week, guys, and I kind of at the end of last year, I kind of sensed that maybe this Brady thing is over, and you got Chris Godwin in protocol concussion. Leonard Fournette looked like he was running in mud. Man, there's not a whole lot that really impressed me in that game. You know, I think that there was a lot of emotion in the opening drive. Brady went down there and quarterback, the greatest quarterback sneaker of all time, by the way. He goes down in there and he gets the rushing touchdown for Arizona or for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, first touchdown of the year. But you know, this opened at 8, up to 8.5, a total of 48.5 opener down to 48. The problem is, guys, they're playing Carolina. I mean, this is a pass for me. I have no interest in laying 8.5 points with Tampa Bay.
Yeah, nor do I. Well, I would think in the idea though of a whole breakout game. Again, keep in mind there's no fans there. Because Tampa Bay usually has pretty good support. Like, if it was going to be Brady's debut in the Raymond James Stadium with 60,000 screaming fans, you would think, yeah, Bucks, you know, coming back home, you know, they might just be prone for a blowout over a team like the Panthers, but a couple things can, like, for instance, I still sort of lean on the Bucks with this game, but wouldn't it surprise me if the Panthers, you know, hung right there, because one, they were all off to a bit of a slow start last week, but you realize with the overhaul they did, got rid of Cam, brought in Matt Rhule as coach, and you know, picked up Teddy or whatever. But as far as I'm concerned, they looked much improved. You look at the Panthers toward the end of last year, why Ron Rivera lost his job. I mean, they couldn't get a first down. And granted, they had Kyle Allen. They had some bad and the kid, Will Greer from West Virginia. They had some horrible quarterbacking. But to me, they looked 100% improved. I mean, they got Robbie Anderson. They got a lot of, like, intermediate receiver guys who can help move the ball. And with McCaffrey in the mix and not the only guy you have to worry about, I feel like, you know, the Panthers are going to be competitive.
I like the Panthers in this game, not to mention that they're going to have the best player on the field. And Christian McCaffrey.
Yep.
So. Can we get Nick to do a prop if Brady's going to throw a pick six?
I'm sure we could. It'd be an out price because you can't. I mean, that's just – you'd be a better price just to throw a interception. But, that's crazy. There should be – why not bet that? Why not come with the proper math for that and just put it on every game? We have to go after our last commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue to have this NFL slate on ESPN 94.5 FM.
Now, back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, welcome back to the last segment of the William Hill Sports Show. Don't forget, Lakers, Nuggets, right after this. Lakers laying 7, total of 210. We bet the Lakers. You can see the ticket on our Facebook page at Kenny B ESPN Sport Handicapping. Bet a nickel on it. That's all the money I had. No, it's not all the money I had in my account. I don't even want to lie right there. All right, I'm scrolling through. We did all these games. Cowboys, Vikings. Cowboys minus 4.5. Excuse me. Cowboys, Falcons. Cowboys minus 4.5 with a total of 53. That's where Nick is currently. This actually opened up. This is Dallas's home opener. Opened up at minus 7 and a 53 and a 50.5. So we've got a 3.5-point move on the total and a 2.5-point move on the dog. It's one of those games, guys. I mean, you know, Josh, you talked about Philadelphia's season being in limbo. Dallas's season is in limbo. But, I mean, it looks to be a shootout on paper. I mean, you look at what Atlanta gave up on defense last week. I mean, it was a ton. Oh, goodness.
And they came alive late, too, as you saw. It's one of those things, too. I was surprised that one was sort of a pick 'em, too, because I thought Seattle's been kind of dominating that rivalry. I wasn't surprised to see them take control. But Atlanta, it's kind of funny, similar to what they did last year against the Saints a couple times. Fell way behind, but then you stacked up a bunch of yards and sort of, you know, pulled it respectable late. But, and, you know, they showed some talent. Like, you know, they've sort of improved their weapons. Of course, Todd Gurley looks pretty healthy, and they picked up Hayden Hurst, a good, you know, first-round tight end from the Ravens. They were so deep that three guys had to get rid of one of them. I think he'll have a huge year. So the Falcons, like usual, yeah, they have all those weapons. Will they live up to their potential is the question. The Cowboys, as you know, Ken, the past few years actually historically have not been very good in these spots covering as a home chalk. And because of that, and with the key number in your favor – Yeah, I feel like, you know, Dallas probably gets it done, but I wouldn't lay those points.
Yeah, it's priced out for me. It's the side is the side. There's a big move. You know, if I like the dog, I miss the touchdown. If I like the total, I've given up 3 points worth of equity right now. So me being a Cowboy fan, this is a game where I'm just going to watch the game and hope for the best for the Cowboys.
I kind of like the over in that. I think it will be a shootout. I think
you like. So it opened at 50, Tommy. It's at 53. Do you still like it over at the 53? You do? I mean, which is okay. I'm just curious.
I do. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game for the reason of that. Of this is kind of a must-win with the way the division's playing out right now for the Cowboys. They don't want to go two games behind if Washington wins. They don't want to fall too far behind the Eagles because I think it's going to come down to the Eagles and them. So I think this is almost a must-win even though it's only week two.
All right. Jacksonville versus Tennessee. This is one of the big line moves right here. It opened at 11. It's down to 7.5. Excuse me. I don't have the total there. Okay, that's about right. You know, Jacksonville got their token win last week, guys. They look pretty good. Is it a farce, Josh, or is it real? I don't want to spend a lot
pretty
of time
much.
On this. We got
to
move on.
Well, to answer that, yeah, I believe it's still a bit of a facade, like you said. I mean, with Jacksonville, you can pretty much count on them for that, the kind of crazy home upset of somebody. Having said that, they might not be as bad as the projections.
Well, I agree with that 100%.
Right. They're not going to be like worst team in the league, doomsday, like I think a lot of the consensus is, especially even after, you know, getting rid of Fournette or whatnot. It looks like they were built okay. I think it's pretty crazy. I mentioned last week they started an undrafted rookie at running back, pretty practically unheard of, and he did well. But no, you know, Tennessee's dominated this physically in years past with their run game. I kind of expect that. I would actually kind of take the Titans on this.
Yeah, I'd probably take the Titans as well. I mean, Minshew was always that guy last year that came out hot and then fizzled away, and it's probably going to be the same thing this year.
It's a tough spot because, I mean, you're talking about laying a touchdown here, and you can't kick field goals. I mean, that's very concerning. Not only that, you can't kick. Did he get cut this week?
I haven't seen him get cut yet.
Steven Gostkowski?
Yeah.
Yeah, I doubt it, Ken, because you realize, though, he was the answer to their problems, believe it or not. Like, I guess they went through guys.
He's an extension to the problem.
Right, they had some injuries, whatever. But they said, you know, I think on the broadcast, that he was just brought in, I think, a few days before the open or whatever. And it goes to show you, like anything else, as much experience he has, one, kickers do physically decline just like any other position. But secondly, he just, you know, he said in his interviews, I thought he was a real stand-up guy afterward, that, yeah, it just takes a while to get the stroke back. He was out there, he was humiliated at how horrible he was. But obviously, I think he's on the street if he misses the last one. And right. Now I think he's got a little – and I do think that his equity, his Hall of Fame pedigree is going to give him some mileage there.
All right. This next game I do agree with the line move. Cardinals -7, total of 46.5. That's what Nick has right now. The total is still hovering right there around the same opening number. Cardinals -6 coming off a huge first week one. Cardinals first Cardinals home game this week. Cardinals are, you know, Kyler Murray can play a little bit. King and Drake can play a little bit. You know, I was concerned for fantasy. Josh, you brought up fantasy earlier. DeAndre Hopkins and his, you know, the way he's going to be built into the offensive game plan for Arizona, well, they put all that to rest. I think Arizona's a sleeper this year, guys, and they can flat play some football. And this Washington Redskin team or Washington team, football team Washington, whatever the heck we're calling them, did they win in week one?
Yes.
It's time for them to get to 1-1.
Yeah, you know, can I like that? But I still,
especially in a teaser.
Right, but I don't know if it's one of those things, though. I think it's too soon to start laying a touchdown with the Cardinals against anybody. They will be upstart. They will be improved. But last week was the perfect spot when you're getting the 7.5. I don't know if I want to lay
and
these
they were
points.
Getting blown out at halftime.
Yes, but here's the thing, Ken. Actually, I think 46 is light, though. I think we're going to see some offense there. What I think the key is on this one is that people are underestimating Washington's – you know, you don't think much of Haskins and everyone else, but they're all right.
Their defensive line is legit. Yeah. Eight sacks last week.
Haskins started slow, but eventually got in a groove. He's not that bad. And I just really think this is the track meet type of deal. I just think over is the play.
Okay.
I like the over on this one, too. I think the Washington team is vastly improved. And not that Arizona's going to be out over their skis, but they're still coming off high off that big win against the 49ers. So they might be asleep a little bit for the first couple quarters and sneak up on them.
I think Washington winning outright versus Philadelphia and now going to the desert, I think that doesn't spell very good for them either. So you think it's going to be a track meet? That's
like
my
the,
second team, Josh.
Over.
Arizona and over that in my 16, okay, cool. In my 16, and I'll post that on the website too. Ravens traveling to play the Texans, laying 7 on the road with a total of 50. This is down to 5 and Ravens -5.5 and a total of 53.5. All the sharp guys were on Cleveland in week one. The Ravens got the money. The move right now is to the Texans, a 2.5 point move to the side and a 3.5 point move to the total. Total's down to 50.5. I still wait for Lamar Jackson to come back down to earth. I guess he hasn't done it yet, Josh.
No, exactly, until the playoffs hit, apparently. But with this one, I feel the same. Like right now, I wouldn't bite on it, but with the spread that you mentioned, what it had been all week, 8, 7.5. Like, yeah, I thought if you could lock in the Texans, 7 in the hook, I like that position because I think as a home dog, they'll probably be able to compete. Although the Ravens, even last year, were pretty good against with the road chalk number. But, you know, I just feel like Houston's competent enough where that's enough points to consider taking.
Yeah. Tommy?
I like Baltimore in this situation. Till Lamar Jackson fizzles out, like you said, I'd keep riding the hot streak.
3 minutes, guys.
All right. Chargers versus Kansas City. Kansas City opened up the season, had a little bit of extra rest here because of that. This opened at 6.5 until a 15.5. It's up to 9 right now, so a big move on the Chiefs. The total, 3-point move to the under, down to 47.5. You know, it's another game, guys, where, you know, Tommy Thompson, you said that until they fizzle out, Kansas City has given me no reason to bet against them. Zero.
That Thursday night game, they just came out and looked like nothing changed, nothing stopped, that they just kept playing.
Having fun, putting up points.
Yeah.
Josh?
Yeah, I like the move on the total because I do believe it's a lot of points again, but I probably pass on the spread. But I do believe what we saw last week, it looks as though the Chargers are going to be sort of that team that looks to shorten the game, right, sort of pound the ball on offense, and you'll get their defense to not give up so many big plays. I just feel like, you know, to be enough of a grinder like that with clock running type of plays, where I think the under's there.
Two minutes.
2 minutes. New England traveling to Seattle to play the Seahawks. Opened up at -3 and a total of 44. It's up to 4, so the money's coming in on the favorite and 45. Seattle looked absolutely fantastic last week against the Falcons. I see no reason for this. I still believe in Cam Newton. I think that he looked okay in week one. I still don't think he can throw the ball. I think Seattle's by far the better team here.
Yeah, for sure. And even with Newton, even if he's the real deal, I still think, based on reputation, whatever, the Patriots are getting too much respect in the spread. I mean, I think it's light. I think the Seahawks roll also.
I absolutely think it's light. It's based. It's built into
the Patriots' reputation. Number. Totally.
It's insulting to the Seahawks that it opened at 3.
For pretty much.
Yeah, I'll take the sea chickens all day long.
All right, and the Monday night game, the Nevada Raiders, Las Vegas Raiders, at home playing the New Orleans Saints They're getting 6. It's up to 6. It opened at Saints -4.5 and a total of 50.5. It's down to 49, so a 1.5 move to the under. And then you have everybody's kind of piling on the Saints. We have 1 minute, too many points. Give me the Raiders at home. Give me the Raiders at home.
I'm taking the Raiders as well. Everybody talks about how bad Brady looked last week, but Drew Brees did not look all that more impressive. So I'm taking the Raiders all day.
And the best player or 1A player is out. Michael Thomas.
And Emmanuel Sanders might be. So you're right. The rule out and Sanders hasn't been – he's questionable. So they might be down there. Two top receivers. They still have plenty of other weapons. But I agree. It's going to be, Ken, one of those things where the public jumps in on the Saints. I think you get Raiders with 7 on Monday night.
Give me the Raiders. But don't forget these inflated lines, just like the Las Vegas Knights, are going to be inflated because they're the Nevada team now. Make sure you do all your wagering with William Hill. Download the William Hill mobile app at www.williamhill.us. Full-service mobile app at your fingertips. We're going to post our best picks on our Facebook page, Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. Our best picks, Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping on Facebook. See you next week. Good luck on ESPN 94.5 FM. Beautiful.